Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, going to have a little bit of a mixed bag here. A little quick recruiting update, more ideas as to what you've seen in your travels, and also have just kind of a brief spring discussion. So excited to do these as always, and no better way to start a podcast, no better way to start a Nolcast than to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product. And they've been a great partner with us and just been a particularly great relationship, and would ask people to continue to support them and have them back of the mind as they make their way through grocery stores or make their way through social media. Any kind of interaction with them has been always much appreciated and has been a great step in proving that we're a serious entity, and has just been a very mutually beneficial relationship.
Ingram, you know where I'll be this weekend?
I do not know exactly.
I'm actually going to be in Louisiana.
I could have guessed that, but so I wasn't sure. Yeah,
little crawfish for me. Little St. Paddy's Day, and that's going to be a blast because I have to be there for work anyway on Sunday, so I'm going to fly in on Friday and enjoy some New Orleans. And I will probably be using quite a bit of Louisiana hot sauce this weekend, as should everybody. It's going to be a blast.
Good for you, man. It's good times, as always, in that part of the country. And just want to thank the good people from New Iberia and the product that they make and the partnership that we've allowed to have with them.
No doubt.
All right, Bud, real quickly, we will go ahead and have a little bit of a recruiting conversation. Not a massive amount of news has taken place, or a massive amount of news has produced itself since the last time we talked. Probably the most significant piece of information is a new quarterback offer. So why don't we have a little bit of just a back and forth as to who Dorian Thompson-Robinson is and where he comes from and kind of where he sits with Florida State right now. I know he was a kid who I think included Florida State in his top 11, top 12. You'll have to correct me on that. But I mentioned that because he included Florida State at the time despite not having an offer. And it appears, as you would guess, that the appearance of an offer has only made Florida State's candidacy all that stronger for Thompson Robinson. So, kid out of Las Vegas, if I'm not confused, and really interesting prospect in his own right.
Yeah, and you know, I think we could have talked about this some on the last show, but I knew that I was going out to LA over the weekend. To see all the kids in SoCal, and a lot of times the Vegas kids come over there. So we waited to do so. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, really, really intriguing prospect, man. I was very impressed. Probably the second best quarterback I've seen so far in person on the camp cycle this year. Now, I haven't seen Lawrence on the camp cycle yet. Clearly, I like Trevor Lawrence better. But I think the only kid I've seen who I thought was definitively better on the camp circuit was maybe Justin Fields, the guy we talked about, the Penn State commit a couple weeks ago. He's better, in my opinion, than all the QBs in Florida, who Jimbo Fisher elected not to offer. He didn't offer Joe Milton yet. He didn't offer Arthur Schakowsky yet. Thompson Robinson really excelled at pretty much everything. 6'1.5", no shoes, so taller than Francois is. 194, which is, you know, size. I got to tell you, Ingram, that he's much bigger in person than he looks on his highlight film, right? And his highlight film's not that long because he was a backup last year, a backup to who? Tate Martell, right. One of the most decorated high school quarterbacks ever who signed with Ohio State. Now, personally, I think Thompson Robinson is a better prospect than Martell. I think Martell may have been a better high school football player, but those two are not always the same thing. 4.79 40 time, which doesn't sound all that fast, but was one of the fastest ones at the camp that day. These Nike times have been a little bit slower than people think. I think they're doing a better job of getting a little more accurate measurements. Back in the day, some of these things seemed juiced as hell, but now they seem a little more true. 4.21 shuttle, which is incredible. And you talk about a shuttle time, that's the ability to change direction, which oftentimes you have to do in a confined space in the pocket. I like that a lot. And then a 34.4 vert. Again, all these numbers from Nike verified. Typically pretty good. at these Nike camps, so I like that. But the 6.5, I think, is something you had to be happy with. Now, Edgar, you know this, and a lot of our listeners probably know this, Jimbo Fisher very rarely will offer a QB before he has a chance to throw for him in camp. Mm-hmm. He's very big on that. You know, he wants to look at their hands, wants to get them on the whiteboard, wants to see how they react and take coaching. You got to be a certain level prospect for FSU to offer you without coming to camp. And how did Jimbo know to offer Thompson Robinson without this? Well, he was actually at a 7-on-7 tournament because Jimbo's oldest son Trey is playing on one of the Tallahassee 7-on-7 teams, and they happen to be out in Las Vegas for the Big Adidas tournament, or was it the Battle? One of the two. It was back to back Vegas tournaments. I think this was the Adidas. And so, under NCAA rule, if you're a coach and your son is playing in a tournament, you or a camp or any type of setting, you can go to that event, which normally college coaches cannot. And so that is a huge advantage, and something that, I think you can bet that Trey is probably going to play 7-on-7, and not, he's actually pretty decent for a while now. And so yeah. Fisher was able to see Thompson Robinson.
I knew of Jimbo Fisher going to 7-on-7s. I didn't know that this was actually linked to DTR, if I can go ahead and make that just to shorten his name slightly. Interesting. Yeah, that's a great advantage, and I know I remember reading articles about the first 7-on-7 that Jimbo went to, and it's just not a setting that you see college coaches in because you're not allowed to be there. Obviously, with Trey being on team, and Trey's a I've seen some tape of him. He can throw the ball pretty well. Doesn't surprise me, being that Jimbo's his father. But as long as he's doing that, I expect Jimbo Fisher to attend, have a pretty strong attendance record, at least as much as possible. That is a advantage that does not exist for other coaches, and would expect Jimbo to try to lean on that as hard as he can. So. Interesting with Thompson Robinson, certainly a guy just from afar. You get the feeling that Florida State's one of his favorite places, that he may be leaning in that direction. Not saying he's a guaranteed or anything, but that very much appears to be the quarterback prospect to focus on for the time being, anyway.
And if you look at Florida State right now, they seem to think they're in it too. Because they're not offering other quarterbacks in the state who they probably could offer if they felt like they were not in it for DTR, which I like that name. Now, I talked to him about some topics related to Florida State, and I said, does it mean something to you that Florida State offered you now? And he picked up on it immediately. He said, yeah, Jimbo's a guy who you usually have to come throw for to get an offer, but I think he was impressed enough with me that he offered without me having to come throw. And he said, and they also haven't offered any other quarterbacks in Florida. So for them to come offer a Las Vegas kid and not offer any QBs in Florida, which, I'm sure makes Florida high school coaches not too thrilled, that means something to him. Now, I talked to him. I said, all right, a lot of people think you're a lock to Michigan, right? Why? He's technically a Michigan legacy because his mom has a degree from Michigan. But he told me, he's like, look, she has 4 degrees. Which I was like, damn. That's
yeah. Okay. Bright mom.
Yeah, she runs public health for the state of Nevada. Real nice lady. Got to chat with her for a little while. And Thompson Robinson's a really bright kid, and obviously his mom is as well. He's like, look, she's got 4 degrees. She wants me to go to a place where I can get the best degree for me, mm-hmm. not just to Michigan. He was really high on UCLA when I talked to him. He was just coming off his UCLA visit. Michigan coach Jed Fish is now at UCLA. He used to be with the Hurricanes under Al Golden, and then went to the Jaguars, and then went to Michigan as QB coach, and now he's at UCLA. So they're pretty tight. I went ahead and put in my crystal ball pick or whatever for UCLA for the time being. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if I end up flipping that somewhere else, but I think a couple takeaways here are Michigan is not a lock for DTR. He was like, no, definitely not. So that's interesting to me. The other thing that he said was he wants to play in a pro-style offense because he wants to become an even better passer. And he thinks he's a passer first. I actually do too. I think he's a good enough passer to where he's not one of these guys who is classified as somewhat, you know, he's such a good run threat that he can pass enough. I think he can use his legs, you know, sort of as a secondary option, but an option that the defense has to respect quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Somebody that we'll talk about for months to come, undoubtedly. Bud, we'll switch it to a wide receiver prospect real quickly. Josh Moore has condensed his list of schools. What does that look like, and where does Florida State stand with Moore currently?
They're down from he's down from 58 to 10, he said. So
significant.
Thank God he didn't release a top 58. That would have been ridiculous. I don't think you have enough characters on Twitter to do that. So top 10, Florida State's in there. Obviously, Ohio State's in there. I like Florida State's chances here. I think Florida State does too. The question here, people are asking me, why do you think Ohio State? I've seen this kid, three times this year? And every event I've seen him at, he shows up like decked out in all Ohio State gear. So either he really finds it super comfortable, or he's trying to play a game, or he has some sort of affinity for the Buckeyes. But this is the kid from Texas. Remember, his brother is committed to Texas A&M. He transferred to IMG. The brother did not.
Right.
Josh is much more talented than Jordan is. So if Florida State gets him, they'd be getting the much, much more talented brother, in my opinion. One of the best receivers in the state. Skinny, but not short, and has a lot of skills. Real natural feel for playing the position. I like Josh Moore a lot.
We will move to the next piece of our recruiting talk real quickly. One large individual that's previously committed to Florida State. Perhaps there's some concern amongst the fan base as to how much that will stay the case. So Robert Cooper is the individual I'm talking about. For those that aren't immediately aware, Robert Cooper is a hilariously large human being, class of 2018 defensive tackle. Listed, I think, officially at like 6'1", 350, 345, depending on where you look. But has been committed to Florida State for a decent period of time. As part of that interest, Alabama has recently become involved, as has South Carolina, I believe, to a lesser extent. But let's talk real briefly about Cooper and where he stands right now.
Yeah, so people on Twitter were kind of flipping out because Robert redid his Twitter profile and didn't have FSU commit in there anymore. And so I got to tell you, man, I don't watch these kids' Twitter profiles that closely. And I do this for a living. There's a lot of noise to separate from that system to actually find anything decent. I don't have time for that. But apparently some people on Twitter do. So what I did, instead of just speculating, I just sent the kid a text, right? I said, hey, Robert, you making a move? And he was like, huh? And I was like, people on Twitter kind of flipping out about you taking an FSU commit off your profile or anything to that. And he was like, no, I just redid my profile. My profile picture or my background picture or whatever is still me and my mom decked out in FSU gear. And I just posted a picture of me in FSU gear with my trainer. So doesn't seem like there's anything to worry about there, based on what he said. Now, look, I think Alabama wants this kid a whole lot. I'm not too worried about South Carolina if from FSU, but Bama, I think you got to watch that. They generally get who they want. You
know? Absolutely. Wasn't he at Bama Junior Day maybe a month ago or so?
No, he skipped. His teammate went.
Okay.
Look, I think Florida State has as good a shot as anybody to keep Robert Cooper's commitment and to sign him. Right now, I would not project him to flip. Now, hell, maybe that changes by the time this podcast is published. I have no idea. We're talking about something that we're 10 months away from a signing. But he still seems pretty actively FSU on social media. He's also, I will tell you this, has always been straight up with me, right? I know him. I know his brother. I think they know me as not an FSU guy, but as a national guy. And I try not to ask a bunch of like FSU related questions. I usually ask open-ended stuff. And he's always been straight up with me. And I think he would tell me, I don't know, man, I'm looking at my options or something, if that was the case, but that's not what he said.
He's been committed for 9 months now.
FSU also took a chance on him, remember, they were like, we're going to take you. We want you to drop the bad weight, which Cooper in turn did actually drop bad weight.
Yeah, that's very true. Florida State will have that and will certainly lean on how long the relationships existed and the time at which the offer was extended. But anytime you're committed to a school for 9 months, there is some truth to the idea that that really you just gave every other school a target as far as how to negative recruit or who to negative recruit. It's a tough situation. So Cooper is a massive talent. He's out of the metro Atlanta area, South Gwinnett High School. Not exactly a pipeline for major players, but a guy that stands out and somebody that will be fielding interest from, you know, really every major program in the Southeast. So if Alabama is the competition, always makes it an interesting foe to go up against, something that we'll continue to talk about. But for now, I think Florida State fans can feel reasonably confident in holding on to the big man from Atlanta. But it's time for us to mention briefly one of our favorite things on this podcast, and somebody that's been with us since day one. Madison Social is obviously who I'm referring to, but of all the things that they do and all the things that we've spoken about, probably my favorite and most consistent product to brag on has been the Reuben sandwich. And I want to remind people that the 17th of every month is Reuben Day, so you'll probably be consuming this on the 16th. And want to keep that in the back of your mind. But tomorrow's not just Reuben Day. Tomorrow is St. Patrick's Reuben Day. They have, I think I saw earlier on Twitter, they have 160 pounds of beef that they brought in to distribute between the three entities under the umbrella of socialness, if you will. So talking about Madison Social Township and Central, but it'll be a great day there regardless, but one of their signature pieces has always been the Reuben Day. I want to just encourage people to have that in mind, and if you are looking for a place to spend a couple hours on St. Patrick's Day in Tallahassee, there will be no better place than those three options.
Yeah, man, it's hard to make up your mind which one to go to. All right, you have the Reuben at Madso, which, look, obviously, Central has Reuben Pizza, which that could be really, really good. And then Township is serving corned beef and kimchi tacos with pickled ginger.
That put me down for a couple of those. Yeah, I mean, those sound incredible.
Yeah, I think I may have to hit that up. That does sound like some serious like Asian fusion, and I can get down with that. That's three great restaurants that like to sponsor this podcast all in one. So I'm definitely down for that. Appreciate them helping us keep this thing going. You want to move to some football talk?
Let's do have a little football talk, bud. We'll move to the topic of expectations, which is always a interesting subject to broach with college football fans in general, but particularly those of the Florida State variety. So Jared Shanker of ESPN had an interesting Twitter conversation a couple days ago that I thought would be a decent idea for us to extend and bring to the podcast. And that was, he asked Florida State fans in particular, how many playoff appearances do they think is a reasonable expectation over the course of a decade? And I think that's a good question to pose, and was interested to see some of the responses. Bud, I'll go ahead and throw that question your way, and we'll start with what your opinion would be.
Yeah, I think my opinion would be three. I think three is a reasonable expectation, and as well as like a good goal to aim for. Now, on its face, that might seem low. And certainly on Twitter, a lot of people were responding in the 5 to 7 range, which I got to tell you, it doesn't really seem realistic. At the same time, FSU might actually come close to that in this current, like, 10-year window because they had Jameis. But look, without Jameis Winston, Jimbo Fisher has one ACC title in 5 seasons. And has 2 division titles in 5 seasons without Jameis. Certainly the Jameis ones count, but at the same time, I don't know that you can project that same rate without a Jameis-type QB. which you don't have on the roster right now. You have a guy who might get drafted. So I think three. And Ingram, here's how I'd break this down, and I want your thoughts on this. If you figure FSU and Clemson in the league that's vastly improving, and not just with FSU and Clemson, but the rest of the league is signing more talent than it used to. They're literally taking some kids from the SEC and the Big Ten. And that's a good sign, I think, for overall league health. Mm-hmm. If FSU and Clemson win like 8 or 9 of the division titles in a 10-year span, which seems high, but I do think they're the two best teams in the league. That means that like Louisville or NC State or Syracuse or somebody is going to win 1 to 2 division titles in a decade, which, you know, you wouldn't pick them to win necessarily in an individual season, but over the course of a decade, you know that for the chance that FSU and Clemson win all 10 is very low, realistically. If they win 8 or 9 combined, right, that means they're probably going to the ACC title game 4 times. I think expecting them to sweep that is unreasonable. Your most likely outcome is probably like 3-1. Thus, you know, three division titles in a decade, maybe 4. I think of those times, the chance that you go to the playoff 3 times out of that 3 or out of that 4 is pretty reasonable. And I think that's pretty good. And it's a sign that this league is improving. And I tweeted out, I said, you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth. You can't essentially tell me how great the ACC is and how it doesn't get enough respect and then impliedly on it by saying that Florida State should win the league 5 to 7 times, should win the league 5 to 7 times in a decade. Now, could they? Absolutely. You have variance across sports is extreme, especially in a sport like football where you don't have, you know, a whole lot of games to grind out that variance like you would in Major League Baseball or something, which, you know, variance still exists there, but to a lesser extent. I think 3 is both a reasonable expectation and a good goal to shoot for. But a lot of people disagree with me. Maybe you're one of them.
Yeah, I'm not, unfortunately, for sake of conversation. I know people like it when we have a drastically different opinion on something, and that happens maybe more frequently even than it used to, but it's probably not going to happen here. I expect, as a Florida State fan, I would expect Florida State to win the division 5 at a 50% clip, and as such, I would expect them to probably win the league somewhere around 35% of the time. So that puts it right around maybe 3, maybe 4, but I would expect 3 to 4 appearances per decade, and I do think we're probably a little bit skewed from appearing in the first. For those that said 7, that's need to pull back on the reins a little bit there, like your enthusiasm. But for me personally, I would expect to win the division more or less every other year. Obviously, you will have years where you string multiple ones together. Clemson will as well, particularly with their devotion and investment into the football program right now. But that would be my expectation for this program moving forward. And maybe that would change somewhat if Miami really emerges, or if there becomes some power in the coastal where you don't sit here and expect to win the league every time you win the division, which is more or less our expectancy right now. But for the time being, I think 3, the number that I immediately put when I looked at Schenker's tweet was 3.5 appearances per decade. So we really don't vary all that much, and we don't vary for, pretty similar reasons.
All right. So I think that's, damn it. All right. That was not quite as much of a conversation topic as I thought it was going to be, but that still was, I like that we provided the breakdown there so that people can see the sort of the understanding. That's hard to do on Twitter because you only have 140 characters, which is why it's fun to do in a podcast. Some of the tougher variables here are, is there any time playoff appearance-wise or Florida State you would project them to make it without winning the league? I think that's unlikely but possible. And then is there any time where you project the ACC champ not to get in? And I think that's, again, unlikely but certainly possible, probably equally possible. Yeah. So very possible. For people that say, well, you're not accounting for the times that Florida State will go to the playoff without winning the league, And indeed, I think we are, because we are also accounting for the factor that Florida State could win the league and not go in a given year. What if Texas all of a sudden, if I told you, hey, one of the years it's going to be LSU, Texas, USC, Ohio State. Absolutely, I could see Florida State getting left out in a scenario where there are tougher schedules or more impressive teams. But I could also see them getting in without winning the league. I think three playoff appearances is pretty fair. I don't disagree with you with the 3-4 range there at all.
Yeah. Moving to our next topic of conversation, Bud, want to talk about a center prospect. Had a friend of mine text me about 2 weeks ago with a picture of this kid asking how much weight he had lost and if he was seriously going to be in shape to compete. And this is, I'm not playing radio or anything else. It exactly happened. 48 hours ago, he sent me a picture of one Bavion Johnson, a significantly slimmed down Bavion Johnson, I'll point out, and said, yeah, this looks like a very legitimate prospect, and I might have been wrong to doubt him. So, Bavion, I believe you received word through back channel communication that he is down to 301 pounds, which is a hell of a get for a kid that was maybe somewhere around 365 during the time of his recruiting. So he has, reshaped his body in a manner that would lead you to believe he's a very serious candidate to play center. You made a good point before we started recording. You don't see a whole lot of real fat centers simply because of what's asked of them. And Bavion's got himself in a place where he could legitimately, at least has a body, to legitimately be a candidate to start at the center position.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by that. I'm getting down to 301 is great news because that means you can sort of rebuild as well and help maybe get to like 310 or 315 if you add the right type of pounds back. So that's encouraging that Johnson has put in the work to get to where he needs to be. Also encouraging from my sources that he seems to be in the good graces of the coaches when it comes to snapping and learning the center calls. We know that he was being looked at some last year as guard and as a guard. And there was some maybe mild disappointment as far as the initial progress. But it looks like there's some encouraging word there. Look, folks, we're not going to sit here and BS you about all these spring developments. They've had, three practices and then they went on spring break?
I don't know. A lot of roster movement, bud.
They're not even popping pads yet.
A lot of need to click this story type information coming out of this.
God. These kids right now are on spring break. They're either in like Key West or Panama City. They're playing the game where you toss water on each other while sleeping and putting it on Instagram and Snapchat. There's no football going on right now. There's just not. But we're doing this podcast for you anyway because we know that y'all are just addicts and we like to feed that addiction. Left tackle. Interesting here. Ethan Frith has been taking a lot of those first team reps at left tackle. I am skeptical that he will be your starter left tackle against Alabama.
For me personally, I haven't convinced myself that Firth is a great candidate, at least at that position immediately, and would be mildly concerned if he is your starting left tackle for Alabama. I don't know that there's a whole lot of places on the roster that I would feel great when you tell me who is going to be your starting left tackle against Alabama. But I think Firth is a good prospect, has potential, but I'm a little bit hesitant to see him penciled in as your day one starter.
So people will say, well, who do you think could be? And I think the guy to look at there is either A, Rick Leonard, if they move him over to the left tackle side, or B, maybe a guy like Josh Ball, who came in, didn't play in a super pass-heavy offense, so he's had to learn more on the fly about the pass blocking, but a redshirt freshman, part of that offensive line class that they signed in 2016 that they felt really good about. A lot of those guys redshirted and are now in their second year. I think Josh Ball will get a look there. Not sure what's going to happen with Juwan Williams, but we'll see there. I'm not super buying this idea that Ethan Frith is going to be your starter.
That's fair. Look, a lot of a lot of positions get moved around at the offensive line, or a lot of people get sampled at different places. That's a better way of phrasing that. So ultimately, Trickett's been here for as long as he has, and I have a certain amount of confidence in him, and will have that for whoever he chooses to put out there. But left tackle's one of the places that I'll pay more attention than others, and Leonard's kind of the name that I would expect to ultimately end up there. But it's a place that is one of the more it's one of the more open positions, particularly when it comes to the offensive line.
Absolutely. All right. Other side of the football here. Some encouraging words about Jalen Wilkerson, defensive end. I think a lot of people will be like, who? And so for some background here, Jalen Wilkerson was the teammate of Cole Minshew out of, were they out of Coffee County, I want to say?
I believe so.
Okay. I'm trying to think back. No, I can picture the uniforms. They're like that dark maroon. Wilkerson came in as a tight end, a bigger body tight end who we knew could block. His hands were suspect, but physical guy, aggressive. We'd always heard, hey, he could also work out as defensive end, but he had a pretty bad shoulder injury. And, you know, shoulders are a different animal, man. A lot of times a guy gets a shoulder and he's never really the same, as opposed to like an elbow or a knee where they seem to come back in a month. But it looks like he's going to be in line for, potentially for some playing time. Has been getting some playing time with Josh Kando out with a hamstring. So I like hearing that. Certainly has the size to do it. And Florida State needs to find some defensive end depth, whether that's Wilkerson, whether that's Janarius Robinson, or whether that's Kando. They got to have some guys who can pitch in and take over the snaps left by DeMarcus Walker.
Wilkerson is an interesting prospect. I completely agree with you. A guy whose name may have escaped a lot of the collective fan base. Not exactly immediately sure as to who we were referencing, but a guy who, after an injury and a position change, appears to have kind of found his footing in the program, and very much somebody that could fill a need and could see way more snaps than we would have been able to project a couple months ago. So Wilkerson's somebody that I personally have been a fan of since he came on to or came into the program. He is from Coffee County, you were correct, or Douglas County Coffee High School, but is an interesting prospect, and is you know, anytime you get a lesser known kid on campus, it's just interesting to see how they progress through their career. And Wilkerson appears to be somebody that could very much make a push for playing time this year at defensive end.
So I think that's encouraging, because you want more bodies, right, in there who you could potentially trust. And it also creates a higher level of competition, so the guys are pushing each other. You don't want to have guys wearing the orange jerseys there. No,
you don't want orange jerseys. You want garnet jerseys. And,
right. Garnet.
Wilkerson looks to be pushing for, and look, that's what it's all about. I mean, we're kind of making light of it here, but anytime you get somebody who's, you know, maybe a little bit lesser rated prospect, but, maybe finds himself at a position change or settles into a program in year two or three, and is really able to push, some of the kids that are a little more highly rated, guys that maybe thought it would be theirs, just by prospect of joining the program and how highly rated they were. It's a real good thing to have a guy like Wilkerson emerge, and it's a real good thing collectively for the program and the culture to have him emerge and push some of the other prospects that we've talked about. So I think that's really an encouraging thing for everybody. And I'm happy to see Wilkerson put himself in a place to contend for playing time.
Other than that, I don't have a whole lot of news and notes from 3 days of spring practice. And I don't think we will have any more until they actually start practicing again. Yeah. Right? So if you're seeing some of these updates from people, like must-read update on spring ball, unless it's like an injury suffered on spring break, you can probably pass on that for like about 4 or 5 days until these kids get back and then they get back – practicing.
Let us have no updates that involve law enforcement, and we'll be good. That's the only thing that I'm looking for in the next 4 or 5 days.
And everybody, safe travels back, because a lot of kids driving, a lot of kids tired after spring break. You know, got to stay off the phones. Let's try not to text and drive.
Absolutely. We will cover spring, obviously. We'll cover all the news that is there. And all the storylines that emerge from spring practice. But like you said, Bud, not a whole lot to really force down people's throats this morning. So we'll let that be our product. I will say real quickly, not Florida State related, just large quarterback prospect related. I am out of Atlanta, and as such, have a lot more information just in daily conversation about the Georgia program than I do others. I will say, Bud, from talking to people yesterday in Athens, I think there's a really serious chance that Jake Fromm, the freshman quarterback prospect, may end up being your starter this year for UGA. And I mention that only because they have a five-star guy who started last year as a freshman in Jacob Eason. So that will be something to watch for. This is a way down the line. But you could possibly see Eason. If he's not starting, I don't think he's in Athens. A guy who, by all accounts, enjoys the college scene, and enjoys some of the things that are offered in Athens. Jake Fromm is a guy who's there to by all accounts really take somebody's job, and is driven, gets it. And is a guy that could potentially unseat a five-star prospect that was one of the more larger-known prospects of his class a couple years ago. So just something to watch for. Not a whole lot of Florida State tied to that. Potentially could be if way down the line Eason does look to transfer, but that's just a little bit of news from around the South.
That is really interesting. If that comes to pass, and I'll tell you because SB Nation is affiliated with NBC, we're strategic partners. I'm on the field for all the Army All-American game practices, and Jake Fromm is a guy who takes stuff really seriously, man. Like, he came into that Army game knowing what they were going to do, like knowing the playbook. He knew where to go with the football, probably more than any other QB. And I think that does speak to his mindset of preparation. If it's the fact that, well, if Eason is coasting on talent, and I don't know that he is, and I'm not at their practices, but if that's the chatter up there that, you know, maybe this is going to be a legitimate competition, you know, Fromm will give them a better chance to win. It's hard to imagine a true freshman beating out Eason, but if that's going to happen, it's going to be a guy who enrolled early. Check. A guy who came in with the right mindset of preparation. Check. That could be an interesting spring. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm certainly going to be watching that.
Yeah, it's a guy that is spending, you know, tons of hours in the coach's office already. A guy who, as soon as he got back from the Army game that you referenced, got all the receiver cell phone numbers and started throwing with him immediately. He's a guy who's emerged supposedly, I mean, look, this is way early, as a leader in a short time on campus, and you're right, all the ingredients are there to potentially have a guy come in and take somebody's job. So we won't go on and on about that, but it would be a significant piece of news and would have some sort of a ramification as you would have a five-star quarterback potentially looking to transfer. But that is that's just a random fact from another program and something that people can choose to keep their eye out and take a look at if they wish.
Also a Little League World Series star, by the way, if people recall.
Jake Fromm was?
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah, Google
does not surprise me.
I don't remember what year that was. I think he was on that Warner Robins team, wasn't he?
That is his hometown, and Fromm,
Yeah, the 2011 Little League World Series.
Fromm's just one of the guys, from what I can tell, does everything at a real high level and has a real persona about him that draws people to him. So,
Ingram, he struck out 11 of 18 batters he faced in Williamsport and had 3 home runs and 8 RBIs.
That's not bad.
11 of 18. That is a I just got done with my fantasy baseball draft, and if I could select a pitcher who had like a 17 K per nine, I would definitely be on board with that.
Well, who knows? Maybe Fromm will unseat Eason and then go play pro ball as well. So you'll have a chance to incorporate him into a fantasy draft at some time. So with that, folks, we'll bring about this episode of the Nolcast to an end. Want to thank you for your continued support. Thank you for your support of our sponsors. Do keep in mind Madison Social tomorrow, March 17th. All three of those restaurants, I should say, Madison Social, Central, Township, huge day for them. Go get a Reuben sandwich, slice of Reuben pizza, or a corned beef taco. All three sound incredible. And Bud, want to appreciate your time and thank you for your time, and look forward to doing one of these next week sometime.
All right. And if Florida State advances past this weekend in the NCAA tournament, we are going to have Michael Rogner on.
Absolutely. This chat is something we've been meaning to do. I know we told people we were going to. Ronger had some other concerns in his life, being where he lives geographically. We can expand on that at a later time. But we do want to get Michael on, and fingers crossed we will have a Sweet 16 team to talk about and preview, not this weekend, but what could follow after that. So we very much plan and hope to be able to do that. Can you hear me say the Big Dipper when it's on me? I'm the biggest I have seen. Yeah, mom don't ever lie to me. I took a trip, traveled to the sun. I told me that I was the only one. Mom don't ever lie to me. Oh, I'm flying, hey, hey, I'm flying. To a link of Aquarius. I said I'm flying. Oh, I'm flying to a link of Aquarius.